It's Against All Odds presented by FanDuel. Hey, take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, the official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 or older and present in select states. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Morning after Sunday, Selection Sunday. Always a great day. Mikey Meatballs producing this disaster of a show. And joining me as always, my wizards of wagering, my gurus of gambling, my barons of betting, my overlords of the odds of D3, Harry, Brother Brian, Darren, the Parlay Kid. What is happening, fellas?
What's going on, Sal?
Hey, Sal.
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, and we are not shorthanded by any means. We're joined also by your friend and mine, legendary college basketball analyst. I put him up against Kellogg, Jay Bielis, Titus, all of them. Host of One Shining Podcast, future spokesperson for Bojangles fast food restaurant chains, Master Tate Frazier is here.
It's the best time of the year. It's great to see you fellas. And look, we get to talk about college basketball. It's the one day of the year where I turn on SportsCenter now and they actually lead with college basketball. So I have to bask in the sun a little bit and try to enjoy this day as much as I can before the madness starts tomorrow night.
You must enjoy it, except you must also be like, these guys don't know much as much as me. Why can't I? I should be wearing the suit. I should be on CBS. I should be, right? There's a little of that.
There's the only person that I feel that with is Seth Davis as he goes through the bracket and tries to play a game of first where he picks all the upsets so that every upset doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Like you see McNeese State, you say to yourself, oh man, that's a fun game. And he's like, I'm taking McNeese and I'm taking Samford. You're like, okay, well, both those teams are not happy about that. So that's the only one, Sal. Other than that, I enjoy it.
I get it. You're an expert. I'm an expert. Here's my grid. I could show you 68 out of 68. Lenardi, 67 out of 68. I think I even had the seedings right, except for BYU, who intentionally forfeited their seeding. They're 5 to get a 6, so they don't have to play on Sunday. I can't blame myself for that, Tate. I'm 68 for 68. But I do know it's going to be me. It's going to be you. It's going to be Harry. We're going to be at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club Thursday and Friday for the early games from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We'll be there. What a time it's going to be. We're going to be racing to 10 for all those early games, right?
I'm so excited. And to see Harry in the flesh is always a good day. So to do it in Las Vegas for the first round. This is my first time being in Vegas for the first round of March Madness. So
it's a big disappointment. There's nothing going on. It's not a lot of fun at all. Won't have Tate for very long, but you may actually see Harry in the flesh. Harry, you took your shirt off last year, right? When we did this, I think.
I did at one point. Yeah. And also, you know, we had drink specials going on. I'm pounding the shots. It happened to be St. Patrick's Day that day.
Friday. All right.
A lot of fun.
Well, lucky it was just at one point he took his shirt off. All right. Listen, we're going to do bed aches. We're going to do NFL big trade. Justin Fields is now a Steeler. We'll do play of the day in the NBA, but let's do this college basketball. Break it down for you. UConn, a one seed, plus 370. Houston, plus 600. Purdue, plus 700. Arizona, 13-1. UNC, 70-1. That's the first thing that jumps out at me, Tate. Your Tar Heels, a one seed, not in the top four odds-wise, according to FanDuel, to win it all. You okay with that?
Yeah, not even the favorites to win their region. Arizona, the favorites to win the West, based on, you know, right, all these predictive metrics that we have out there. We got a lot of metrics in college basketball. I know you guys know this. So a lot of people have already decided what's going to happen in the tournament without even the games being played. But yeah, North Carolina, they're getting the short end of the stick, but I think it's a good thing in the end. You don't want these prognosticators to pick you. That's what I've learned. And UConn, they are facing an uphill battle because I think every pundit I've seen outside of Clark Kellogg has decided to pick UConn to win it all. So that is a tough pill to swallow. And if you believe in momentum and, you know, superstitious things, that's not good for the Huskies.
Yeah.
So,
and there's extra pressure on all the one seeds this year as Shannon Sharp picked them all to advance to the Final Four.
You did a lot of work. I mean, you know what I mean? You talked about guys crunching watching. The numbers.
It really is going on in a big limb there. All right. I wanted to, we only have Tate for like five more minutes. So Tate, let me ask you right there, which top seed is going to leave our jaws hanging on Thursday and Friday? Maybe a top seed or a one or a two you see getting bounced this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think Purdue is the one that everybody wants to pick because there is a vendetta in the entire ether of the college basketball and beyond conversation that people just hate Purdue. So I think everybody wants it to be Purdue. I think Houston is a team that I worry about. Nebraska, Texas A&M, that is a very fun game. I give Texas A&M the edge in that game. I love that backcourt that they have. Boo Radford, one of the best names in college basketball, and a guy who's a Kimba candidate that we've been talking about. So Houston A&M is a tough matchup, and Houston's guard is they're kind of the difference. And I think that, you know, A&M might have a better backcourt than Houston. I know that's a stretch to say. So Houston worries me in the second round. We've seen a lot of 8-9 teams go in and beat one seeds. That typically is the formula. And it's typically the formula for the defending champs. So UConn with FAU, if FAU gets there, obviously went to the Final Four last year. Maybe this is Dusty May's game to signal to the rest of the world, hey, I'm one of college basketball's best coaches. So UConn there as a 1-8 would be scary. And then my North Carolina Tar Heels, Mississippi State, if they get there, I think that's a really bad matchup for North Carolina.
Really?
They struggled against the SEC, Auburn in particular in the past. We saw that in 2019. So if Mississippi State is there for North Carolina in the second round, I would flag that one. Very similar to NC State, who we just saw beat North Carolina in the ACC tournament championship game.
Interesting. All right.
So a lot of 8-9 games, I think, are very, you know, even TCU with Purdue potentially. I mean, there's a lot of intrigue where those one seeds could get upset.
It's always tough. And of course, now I can't find it. But there was like with an 8 or 9 seed, I think like an 11 seed has made the Sweet 16 like something crazy, like 7 of the last 10 years. But now I can't find my 8-9 number, which is driving me crazy. I got too many things written down here. All right. Tate, let me ask you. Double digit seed that surprises you, as long as we're talking about 11 seeds, which you talked about some 8-9s. What's an 11, maybe even a 12 that could jump out?
Yeah, I think an 11 that everybody's going to like is New Mexico. They have the guard play. They have Jalen House, Eddie House's son. He reminded us that is his kid by, you know, getting excited when he had 28 in the championship game. You got Jamal Mashburn Jr., Monster Mash 2.0. Doesn't look like his dad, but can shoot like his dad. Then you got Donovan Dinn, who's one of the best guards in the country. So you talk about guard play in the tournament. New Mexico has that. They have Pitino. We didn't get Rick Pitino, but we get Richard Pitino in the tournament. So I think New Mexico is a pick that everybody likes. Even Clemson was a little upset when they saw their draw against New Mexico. They just all took a seat. So I think that signals a little bit about how good this team is, and obviously won the Mountain West. And then Oregon is another team as an 11 seed, just won the Pac-12 tournament. They have a lot of five-star talent. I know Archie would be happy to hear this, but I think the Ducks getting South Carolina in the first round, they have a chance to make a run. And last time we were in Phoenix, Oregon was in the Final Four. So who knows? Maybe they could get to
that's right. Four. Yeah. He's very excited. I told him enjoy it because I don't know if they'll ever make the tournament again while he's in school. I don't know. Maybe it'll take him 15 years to graduate and it won't be as bad. But moving over to the Big Ten, it's going to be tough to get a bid. Yeah, I have this written down. And the numbers were scrolling so fast, so this could be wrong. But back to double digits. Double digits have made the Final Four in the last 15 tournaments. Is that true? Double digit seeds? I don't know. I'll have to look at that. That's news to Shannon Sharp, if not to all of us. All right. Tate, about the draw before we say goodbye to you. What surprised you the most? Anybody left out that you were like, oh my God, we love our guy Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from Indiana State. They're out, but I feel like they were three teams away. St. John, Seton Hall. I know you thought Virginia, we talked about it on Through the Ringer, was going to get the nod. And they did kind of. So What stood out to you there with the draw?
Yeah, I think the biggest snubs, Rick Pitino says that we should never talk about the net again. Obviously, the net ranking is a big deal in college basketball. Rick Pitino says that they should be banished. So he doesn't get in. Shaheen Holloway, I thought Seton Hall was a team that should get in, especially when Shaheen took a team like St. Peter's to the Elite Eight. You would think that the committee would have some sort of rapport with him, some sort of respect for what he's done in the tournament before and give him a nod. So I thought Seton Hall getting snubbed and Rick Pitino getting snubbed. As much as people keep talking about Izzo, they're like, they would never leave Tom Izzo out. Well, they should never leave Rick Pitino and Shaheen Holloway out. I think those two coaches should be in March Madness. Robbie Avila, like you said, is another guy that, you know, we all just wanted the big guy, but we got DJ Burns. So we got a nice consolation prize.
That's a fun one.
At NC State. He's a good one. Kim English said that he doesn't believe in analytics anymore. So Providence, we lose Devin Carter, who's a top 10 pick based on the Ringer's big board. So we're going to miss out on him. And then Sister Jean, the last one, Sister Jean, she had a case. She wanted to be in the tournament and CBS loves her. So we lost some big time characters, honestly. So some big snubs.
What do you think of that, Harry? I mean, you're going to cry about they did the right thing with Pitino kicking him out of this tournament. But Tate says it's nice to have flavor like this every year.
No, it is. But I mean, I think Seton Hall deserved to go ahead of St. John's. St. John's, again, 14 losses, 1-6 versus Creighton, UConn, and Marquette.
Harry's by the book.
And they beat 9 wins, St. John's, 9 of their 20 wins against the bottom 4 teams of the Big East. They beat Sacred Heart. They beat Holy Cross. That's 11 wins against garbage teams. And the best non-conference win was Utah, who's not in the tournament.
I think they looked at non-conference wins more than ever this year. That's why Indiana State didn't get a nod. That's why Pitt didn't get a nod. These teams are like Indiana State, I know, was like 320th in non-conference wins. So do you get that was the metric that they were staring at?
Yeah, and then you got teams like Princeton. Mitch Henderson's like, I can't schedule a quad one game because these teams don't want to play us and lose, because that then takes them out of the tournament conversation. So it's kind of like this circular logic where we can never figure out what they're actually looking at. And the funniest thing to me was Jeff Capel was trying to call out the Big 12 for their non-conference scheduling. And in turn, they looked at their non-conference scheduling and figured out it was worse than a lot of the Big 12 teams. And I think that was the big argument against, you know, Jeff Capel. And if he never said anything, I don't think people would have really been, you know, looking into his non-conference scheduling. So some of the stuff is ridiculous. I understand the coaches' frustrations, and it's honestly, unfortunately, going to lead to expansion talk, which, is my nightmare. So let's hope that doesn't.
Yeah, let's not expand. Enough of that. But on the other hand, what do you think? I don't want to taint you before we let you leave. This NIT thing, a lot of fake outrage over teams turning it down. Harry, actually, you're a big culprit there. What the hell do you care who goes to the NIT?
I don't, not that I care. It's just like, who's St. John's? Who are you to turn down the NIT? You just made it to the first time you've won a couple of games in the Big East tournament in 20 years, and you have the tournament on your home court. And you don't make it to the NCAA ever, hardly ever. So take the NIT when it comes to you.
Why do teams have to go to the NIT, Tate? What does the NIT do? Who is the NIT to demand that they get everyone scraps is my thing on this.
I feel bad for the NIT. The NIT used to have a much better reputation. It does seem like Carolina started this trend. North Carolina, I'll pat my chest and say it's our fault. North Carolina, were the first ones to turn their noses up and say, we're not going to the NIT. And I feel like we started a terrible trend. And it was obnoxious when Carolina did it, and it's obnoxious when all these other teams do it. So
Not good.
Can I ask Tate one thing, Sal?
He's got to go. But go ahead. What?
Hey, Kansas is a 4. They're a 4. Yeah. Themselves a 4. I know the Big 12 was very good this year, but they finished 5th in the conference. They've got injuries at the wrong time. They're 1-4 in the last 5. And when is a 4 seed ever lost? Not only lost 2 in a row down the stretch in the last 2 games, but they lost by 50 points in the last 2 games. Yet Bill Self gets a 4, and they finished 5th in the conference.
If they were Missouri or something like that, they'd be a 6 seed. But they're Kansas, so they're a 4 seed. And I think they kind of got a tough draw because Samford presses the entire time. They're playing in altitude. They don't have depth. So Samford, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it's McNeese State.
McNeese is going to beat Kansas State anyway. So what's it matter? Yeah. McNeese is beating Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, you think McNeese is going to Sweet 16. So I like it. So there you go.
All right, listen, speaking of going places, Tate is going. He's leaving this podcast. He's jumping on another podcast. You can catch him on Through the Ringer with me tomorrow. He's the host of One Shining Podcast, and he'll be making 750 appearances on local radio stations podcasts around the country this week. Tate, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in Vegas, buddy.
See you, Tate. I love it. Appreciate you guys. See you on Thursday.
Good luck, Tate.
Thanks, Tate.
You got it, pal. Tate, there you go. I'm on a show with him every week. He's a delightful man, Brian.
Well, did you give him free bets yet? Because don't forget, last year he gave us Miami at like 14-1.
I didn't even get to it. I know. Geez,
you know, this guy.
He gave us Miami to win the region at 14-1. He also gave us all kinds of losers.
He gave us Arizona to win the whole thing. And I think I jumped on that. I was thinking of jumping on that this year too, but decided against it for that reason.
Well, let's go over this a little more in depth here. Trying to think. So Oregon, NC State, and Duquesne were the surprise conference tournament winners, and they knocked out a couple of at-large. I think there was like five at-large teams that were knocked out. Everybody at tournaments like this was, aside from the COVID year, this was the toughest year to figure it out. Oregon, NC State, Duquesne winning didn't help. Illinois wins a Big Ten. I gave that out a plus 310. North Carolina got a one seed. That was nice. I gave that out a couple weeks ago. But let's talk about your biggest surprise from selection committee. Parlay Kid, what do you think? What was the biggest shocker as far as you're concerned?
Well, there's a lot of surprises, Sal. Yeah, sure. The Big East, very surprised to see the snubbing that went on in the Big East. And you know, last week I had mentioned the strength of the Mountain West Conference. So I think the Mountain West was rewarded with six teams making the tournament, but they weren't rewarded with good seeding, which kind of, I think, is the shocker to me with the teams getting placed where they were, right? So I think Utah State's probably better than an eight seed? Yes. Do I think Boise State and Colorado State need to be playing the play-in game? No. Do I think Nevada, even against my Dayton Flyers, who are a favorite in that game, should be a 10 seed? No, that probably could have been flip-flopped with those seedings. I think, so to me, the biggest surprise with the seedings from that conference. So I think they rewarded them, the conference, with so many bids, but at the same time then really snubbed them when it came to the seeding of those teams and really showed no respect to that conference, which super underrated, as we know. So to me, it was the seeding of the Mountain West that surprised me the most, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So we might want to, you know, FanDuel, you could bet by conference how many wins a conference is going to have. And I don't know. So you might be saying Mountain West, you know, they got a chip on their shoulder, got a bunch of teams in there. Maybe they can win a few games. Brian, are you saying that about the Big East? You were surprised that so few teams got in from that conference.
Look, I mean, I didn't love that only three teams got in. It seemed like the Big East got screwed a little bit. But you either have to believe the Big East was either a good conference or really just an overrated conference, right? So it's either Marquette and Creighton shouldn't have been as high of seeds, right? Either they shouldn't have been a two or three, or another team or two should have made it, right? Because if you look at Creighton,
kind of the opposite of what the Parlay Kid is saying, right? Almost exactly about the Mountain West. You suffered, you know, you made them suffer by not letting the teams in, but you rewarded them by giving them better seeds.
Right. You give Creighton a three seed. I get it. Look, last year they had a chance that they really could have gone far. But, they lost a bunch of in-conference games, and they had some losses, some bad losses to some of the teams in the Big East. So you could say maybe Creighton really shouldn't have been a three seed, but I know Harry really likes Creighton, and I think Creighton's pretty good, right? And then on the other hand, too, maybe Marquette, you know, maybe they're a little bit overrated. Maybe they shouldn't have had a two seed, but it's one or the other. I feel like if you have a 1-2 and a three seed, there's somebody else in that conference. Some of those teams lost enough, like, you know, again, like I said, Creighton had enough in-conference losses that whether Seton Hall got in, again, I could see why maybe St. John's didn't when you look at the non-conference wasn't great. But somebody else, Providence, somebody else could have got in there.
Right. All right. Harry, I know you, maybe this is just you taking a shot at the Parlay Kid. I don't care. Whatever it is, it is. Tell us what was the biggest surprise to you.
Well, I think it's Dayton getting a seven seed, but I'm not taking a shot at Darren. If anyone deserves a break in seeding dating back to COVID, it's Dayton when there was no tournament. So they really, you know, and I hope they make a run for Darren. I hope they do. But them being a seven is nuts. They went 3-3 down the stretch and didn't make it to their conference tournament final. They finished third in the regular season, third behind Richmond and Loyola, who finished ahead of them. And if Richmond or Loyola, one of those two, would have got in as an at-large, then it makes it sound a little bit better that you give Dayton a 7. But it's almost like the committee had Dayton penciled in at a 7 like 2-3 weeks ago when they were actually on top of the A-10 during that time. And the best non-conference wins are against LSU and St. John's, and neither of them in the tournament. How is Dayton a 7 when Duquesne wins the tournament and they're an 11 and nobody else from the conference gets in?
Duquesne apparently was an 11 before they even played yesterday, is everything I'm reading. But Parley Kid, just start winning games. Come on with this Dayton, all right? You got a nice seed. You're an underdog as a 7, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're an underdog.
Yeah.
One of the 7-10s.
Rightfully so, they should be an underdog.
I
can't disagree with Harry. I think this is where, though, the analytics...
Why not? It's the most fun part of the podcast.
I know. I'd love to be able to sit there and argue. Make a run. That's cool. If Dayton
makes a run, good.
No, I don't see it, Harry. They have no depth. Yeah. They're literally playing 5 guys like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
They kind of hit a wall midway through the season. I mean, they won games, but not in any type of impressive fashion. Yeah. Do I think they should... It seemed like you're right. They were locked in at a 7. That's because this is where the analytics and stuff say they should be a 7. I don't, but if you watch the Dayton Flyers, like I basically do every game, I would tell you that they shouldn't be a 7. That's for sure. If you just, I kind of agree with
that.
I think this could have easily been flipped. Dayton a 10 and Nevada a 7, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Easily.
All right. It doesn't really matter. The point is, it really doesn't matter. And I know I'm the one who asked you guys the questions, what bothered you the most, but I don't get upset about any of this stuff with the seedings. And like, if you're a 1 or a 2, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll get my answer. The most surprising thing is that Iowa State was not the top ranked number 2 seed. In fact, they were the last ranked number 2. For them to go against UConn, by the way, that East is stacked. That's not fair, right?
Yeah, that's a tough UConn, spot. I don't like that Iowa State. I don't like that Auburn should not be a 4.
Sal, 11 of those 16 teams. In 11 spot. Of those 16 teams in the East won their conference tournament.
Yeah, right. And that's crazy because 11 of the top seeds won their tournament. 11 of the top 32 tournaments, only 11 won, which is nuts. So, they're not doing them any favors.
The way Iowa State beat Houston, are you kidding?
Suffocated them. So they should have been the best number 2 seed. They were listed as the worst number 2 seed. They won their tournament. Like you said, they knocked off the overall number 2 seed in Houston. 27-7 for fourth best, and they're the fourth best 2 seed. So I don't know. My answer, I guess, is that anyone in that East region got screwed, but I'm not going to go too crazy. For someone who fills out his pads 47 hours for each tournament, I'm not going to yell and scream, because with these things, especially with the NCAA, if you're the 73rd best team, you can't cry about not getting in. If that's the case, then go win your tournament or do whatever you have to do, right? You're not going to be one of the best in there. I don't even care about it with football, like with Florida State. I was like, they didn't get screwed either. Like, so I'm not going to go nuts about NCAA and the 72nd best team not getting in. Let's do this. Forget about the negative. Let's go positive. Give me your winner, Bri. Who's taking this whole thing? Who's cutting the nets down? Who'd you have in the beginning of the year? Who are you taking now?
Well, I wish we didn't talk to Tate before this, because I gave out Houston at the beginning of the year. I forget what they were, +900, +950. And I'm going to stick with them. Typically the winners are 1 seeds. And many times I'll say the overall 1 seeds get knocked out before the final 4. That's kind of a fact there. So, that kind of knocks UConn out potentially. The thing is, I guess you could say every year with the portal, right, and going forward, we're going to see more and more craziness. So it's probably stupid to stick with these 1 seeds. I think the biggest thing with Houston this year, right, the fact that they played in the Big 12, right, every year, I know they've had some tough conference games in the past, but it's not the same thing. They battled through. They won the Big 12s during the season. They were tested all year, right? This was, you know, that conference had, you know, they run 8 or 9 deep there with really good teams here. They have great guard play. They're a good offensive and defensive team. So I think they're going to be right there. I mean, I do have some concerns at like Kentucky in that region, some things, but who doesn't have concerns or who doesn't hate the pick they're about to give.
Right. I'm with you. I hate the pick I'm about to give. Well, first of all, I came out with Marquette at the beginning of the year, Tyra Colic, this, that. Now he's out. He should be back in time. They made a nice run considering not having him out. Yeah, I mean, that's 8 assists per game that they've given up. But just for them to make to the Big East Finals, they got crushed by UConn. But to get there without him is pretty remarkable. They're 25-1 right now. I think they're about the same when I picked them. So no value. But as far as looking at value, I'm going to go Purdue. Parlay Kid, I think you have them too. I'm just looking at 7-1 for one seed. I just think they're just way too high for a one seed. And I think they have the easiest path for those first three games. I get it. They're the choke artists. They'll lose 1 versus 16, but they're capable of beating teams. They beat Tennessee. They beat Gonzaga. They beat Alabama. All their losses are in conference. So I think 7-1 is good. They beat Samford, the Kansas's opponent, by 53. So I don't think they're taking anyone lightly this year. And like, they're going to have a Kansas or a Gonzaga in the third game if one or either of those teams is around. So I kind of think 7-1 parlay kid, you're probably saying all the same things as me. And Harry's going to jump all over us, but you're like Purdue as well.
Yeah, I think like you're saying, Sal, getting them at 7-1 with a team that, Sal, if they're not playing with the chip on their shoulder in this tournament and being laser focused on what they have to do round by round, then shame on them. We'll hear Harry kind of slam this in a second, but You got a team that's got veterans all over the place. They have great guard play. They obviously have a tremendous big man as well. We've seen teams bounce back the year after.
Yeah,
just having a just devastating loss. Could this be Purdue? Absolutely. And like you're saying, Sal, I like where they are in the bracket. I really do. I think they got a really good spot. I mean, they could see, they could see the Zags again, possibly in the Sweet 16, even providing that they get by. I think it's going to be Utah State or TCU, which won't be an easy second round game for them. But I think they get the job done this year, Sal. Maybe this is a little out of spite because I know how much Harry hates Matt Painter.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe I'm just rooting for this more than I really think it's going to happen. But what the heck? I'm on Purdue. I gave out Michigan State earlier in the year to win it all at like crazy, 40-1 odds, but that's not going to happen. But let's take the other Big Ten school in Purdue here, Sal. They've had a tremendous year. Losing that game against Wisconsin means absolutely nothing to them at this point.
So, Harry, you're going head-to-head with the Parlay Kid. If you could root for one result in the entire tournament, it's that Purdue loses in the first round, right, to either Montana State or Grambling, right?
If that'd be fantastic. Yeah, but the thing is looking for the committee not putting St. John's in, I praise them for that. But Sal, you're right. The Connecticut bracket is unbelievable with those teams that are in Illinois, Auburn, Iowa State. I mean, the committee gave Purdue such an easy path compared to what Connecticut has.
Oh, come on.
They really have. Are you kidding me? I just mentioned Kansas. Last two games, they lose by 50 and they're a 4. Gonzaga's not no Drew Timmy anymore. No, they didn't win the conference anymore. What an easy break for Purdue to get to at least the Elite Eight compared to what Connecticut has, where Connecticut's been.
Yeah, but it's easy for everyone to compare to Connecticut. It's easy for Houston. It's easy for North Carolina. It's easy for all the ones compared to Connecticut.
But Harry, they also have Creighton on their side of the bracket too. So, I mean, gosh, I mean, they might be in the toughest part. Maybe they're in the toughest part.
I'm not backing off. I'm not backing off like Sal's backing off of Marquette. I'm taking Creighton out of the Big East. I'm not switching it. I had them last year, you guys know, and I got screwed by the referees in that San Diego State game, a terrible call. And I was fine with them losing in the Big East tournament against Providence. They can focus on the tournament, have a solid starting five. Kalkbrenner, a lot of length there, averaging 17-8. Trey Alexander is going to be in the NBA probably next year, 18-6-5. Baylor Shireman led the Blue Jays in scoring. They're the only team, Creighton, that has three players on their team averaging 17 points or more.
I saw that. I don't like that, by the way, because then you get one of them goes cold. I like these other teams that average all their starters average double digits. Bri, wouldn't you rather have that than three guys who average 17?
Yeah,
one of those three gets cold,
right.
You're in trouble.
You could be right. Unless somebody goes for 30. It's weird, though. Creighton.
They also have Ashworth, who was a transfer they got from Utah State, who's a three-point specialist, too. So
all right, Harry, just play, Harry has to read everything on his thing.
I like Creighton, too, but they were, I don't know, they were more disappointing
this year.
They were
shady at times.
They were
right,
more
Brian.
Disappointing this year than they were last year.
Yeah.
They're all shady right. at times.
So, all right, so those are their picks. I'm going to go Purdue. I still had Marquette from earlier in the year. Parlay Kid's going Purdue. Harry's sticking with Creighton, and Bri is sticking with Houston. I got a pick from. I feel bad asking Tate for a pick on a Monday. I do. But that's
gonna,
how it is.
You're going to get his pick at another time.
We'll
so
get
I'm
it.
Sure,
it'll
right?
be all I mean, oh, God, I think it's Carolina. I'm pretty sure it's Carolina. That's not a bad one. All right, listen, let's take a quick break, and then I want to talk Justin Fields when we return. All right, so the big news in NFL, the Steelers trade for Justin Fields, a 2025 sixth that converts to a fourth if he plays more than half the snaps, 51% of the snaps. And I just, you know, if you're a Steelers fan, you're happy because I think a week ago at this time, and whenever they signed Russell Wilson, you had Russell, he was going to compete with Pickett, and then Pickett dropped off. He took a, you know, he went to Philly. So your situation, if you're a Steelers fan, is better than last year. Last year and last week, I think you didn't give up much for Russell and Fields. But Bri, I'm way off, and everybody is way off with what they could have fetched for Fields. I mean, we were hearing stockpile these guys. You could always trade Fields for a one or two ones or something. I get it. It's where he is on his contract, right? This is his last year, so that factors in. For sure. But for God's sakes, I mean, we look at a league where there was like six good quarterbacks and Fields couldn't have played better for his situation. And this is what he gets, a sixth. I don't understand what's going on.
I mean, I don't get the whole situation, right? Because there's a couple things, right? Because you could say, all right, they get a sixth. Does Fields, was he okay with going to the Steelers? Because they also said like, there's not going to be a competition, right? I guess it's just Russell Wilson's job. And then
Russell Wilson's a starter, which is another weird thing. Like, if FanDuel's prop numbers haven't changed, you could still get 25 or more touchdowns at +175 for Russell Wilson.
Right.
So,
but how could you know that for sure right now? There's a possibility. There is a possibility that Fields is better, right? At this point. I mean, not to say he is, but there's a possibility by the time. But I wonder how many teams, if they realize, I wonder if he was floated to every team just because compensation, a six-round pick, anybody, I know his, you know, there's contract numbers and stuff for next year that you have to worry about and whatever, but everybody needs a good backup, right? If that's all Justin Fields is going to be, everybody made a mistake that he's not at least your backup potentially. Because what's going to happen is we do this every year. Everybody thinks they have a quarterback. We're going to get to week three or four and be like, oh my God, like 10 of these starters are awful. And you have Fields not playing at all. And it's just not, not going to make any sense. Like, again, for the Raiders, I mean, this is another dumb thing the Raiders did. Like, you bring in the Bears offensive coordinator, who's terrible. Yeah. And maybe he didn't develop Fields. And now you can't bring in Fields because you have this guy. Like, I mean, I don't know. Because the Raiders should have brought him in. Minnesota should have brought him. There should have been a few teams. And look, even if you draft a quarterback,
Atlanta? Like, I know every situation is different, right? But you paid Kirk Cousins a ton of money, which you wouldn't have had done for a year for Justin Fields. Why wouldn't that be your answer? These guys are all around 12th best quarterback, right? Like, that's, I just can't. In my head, I feel like I've never been more lost in terms of what you can get value-wise for these quarterbacks. Like, all right, Parlay Kid, the gold standard for the young quarterbacks the last three years right now is C.J. Stroud, right? Tremendous. Like, what could you get? You could still get a first-round pick for him, right, if they put him on the market?
Whereas
Bryce Young is on the other end of the spectrum. And so you could get like nothing for him. Like, Fields is better than Bryce. What could you get for a Bryce Young if you can only get a sixth for Fields. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Sal, I don't get it. And you guys are more down on Fields than I am. I like I get Fields. And obviously around the league, the people know more about it than I do must not be high on Fields. It must just be a consensus amongst the football evaluators that he's not very good. Mm-hmm. But still, Sal, are you telling me you wouldn't want this guy? If you're struggling in the quarterback position, like Brian said, the Vikings, amongst other teams, if I am playing against Fields, I certainly have to prepare against playing for him. He's a major threat to go against, even if you use them just for certain packages.
Right.
He's worth more than a sixth round pick. It makes those, even if you said we're just going to use them like on third and short plays, or fourth down plays. That's got to be worth more than a sixth-round pick.
It's got to be more than Trey Lance
to me.
What we paid for Trey Lance, we don't even use him in those situations. And
people are appraising. Well, look at Lynch got for Lance from the Lance.
Right.
Lynch traded 3 first-round picks to move up 9 spots. Let's not take bows because you got a fourth for Trey Lance, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what the market was, and somehow the market has now even become more off kilter with what's happening. I hope Fields lands on his feet. I mean, Pittsburgh could maybe now turn Fields. Hey, he has a good preseason. Who knows what they could turn Fields into? Mm-hmm. Maybe they turn him into a second round pick, right? Maybe that's what their goal is ultimately.
But
I
that was
know,
my point. But, like, I feel like he played as well as he could down the stretch. Like, whereas Bryce Young, you wouldn't even dream of trading Bryce Young if you're Carolina.
Because
you need to see another year out of him to lift him out of the cellar there, trade value-wise, right? But Justin Fields, like, oh, my God, this guy lit it up.
And meanwhile, I mean, he had more,
not only did the rest of the league not like him, but even the Steelers are saying, we're not even sure about him because we're playing him as a backup. And FanDuel doesn't like their situation at all because they're still plus 950 to win the North. But Harry, you have an answer to this. You understand this.
I understand because, look, for a six-round pick, I get Steelers, why not do it? Because I think that 3 years ago when we did our draft pod.
Saying the Steelers shouldn't have done it. Well, that's all
I'm
saying.
What I'm saying is, forget it, NFL, all of sports, the 4 major sports, the Chicago Bears front office is top 3 worst front offices in sports, not just the NFL, in sports. And they would have had to eventually pay in the next year, had to pay Fields more money, and they chose not to do it. They didn't do it with Roquan Smith, let him go to Baltimore. And look, he could, who knows, by week 3, like Brian and Darren said, by week 3-4, who knows? Like, if Russell Wilson isn't panning out, and if he gets, they at least have, Steelers are going to have a quarterback they can develop and have some weapons around them.
I know, and I'm not saying look, Chicago's front office is bad, but there were no offers better. I don't think they got a third round offer and said, no, we want to trade him to the Steelers for a 6. Right?
Like that's amazing.
That was the best. I don't know. I feel like now there's a simplistic way to look at it, Parlay Kid. But I feel like in fantasy, this is like if someone traded Justin Fields for a kicker, we'd be outraged, right?
Well, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Harry,
Harry might do that. Yeah.
Hey, remember the Bears traded up with the Giants. They didn't even have to in the draft to go get Fields. They traded up with the Giants to get Fields. They didn't even have to. And now
Sal, for the surprise. You're right. And here's the thing. My contention is, one, now there's just the pressure on Caleb Williams is astronomical.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This guy's got to be an awesome quarterback as far as I'm concerned, because you could have kept Fields and traded that pick, right?
Yep.
And loaded up on players, right? So what could they have gotten for the first pick in the draft?
Well, if they didn't like Justin Fields, they could have gotten Drake May and a good pick, right? Who would have been able to
Exactly. I think they've screwed this up. I think they've really messed this up, the Bears.
Right.
Big time. big time.
Well, luckily, I'm going out to dinner with our friend Little A, who is an expert on all these things, except he played this completely wrong. But I want to hear how he's going to do a victory lap about this Justin Fields going for a pound cake here. Let's shift to NBA. Let's give these guys what happened in the NBA. The Bucks with no Giannis beat the Suns yesterday. Kyrie had the lefty buzzer beater. Oh, everyone went nuts about this. When it's your offhand, isn't it luckier than it is? Like, wow, I can't believe it, right? Parlay, I don't know whether, and they're in seventh place, the Mavericks. And now it's like,
Magic Johnson cracked me up. Yeah. When he's like, best left-handed shot of all time, basically. It's like,
right.
I'm pretty sure Chris Mullin made a million left-handed shots. You want to say best offhand shot of all time? I can maybe go along with that. But, you know, think a little bit more. I mean, again, a great shot. Good for Kyrie.
I have a vendetta against the Mavericks, who just bailed on the season on me when I had them to make the playoffs. And here they are at seven, and everyone's like, oh my God, look out for the Mavericks. What do you say, Brian?
Well, I was going to say, you have Luka, and the funny thing about that is you have Luka and Kyrie, and that's the shot you get off, right? Your shot is like a 20-foot left-handed hook shot. Not a good shot.
And at the end of the day, okay, big deal. Good shot. You beat Denver. Watch Dallas lose the next three, and what's it even matter, really?
Right.
By the way, Sal, you mentioned the Suns.
I can't tell with Dallas. I hate
Suns. The big three have been so disappointing all season. Phoenix has. It's just been awful to watch. 39 wins this year. 14 of them. 14 of their 39 wins with the big three. Supposed to be so great this year. 14 of them are against teams that would be technically in the playoffs right now. Just 14.
Well, listen, I'm all over the NBA and their in-season stuff and some of the other things they try to do, but this 7-10 thing is it's smart. It's definitely smart. Yeah. When you're going to have the Mavs, the Suns, the Warriors, and the Lakers. That's a lot of star power in that 7-10 if it holds. Right now. And then 9-10 will hold. I mean, because the Lakers and Warriors are four games ahead of the Rockets, and they're not probably going to get to the six. So I think that'll be fun if it stays like that. Also fun, Bri, AD, I just like all the maladies, whatever. You don't want anybody injured, but he just add it to the list. I'd love to see a chart of his body, like an operation thing, like poked in the eye swelled shut. They had to take him out.
That's a good idea.
I guess
they
had to take him out because they know when he hits the ground, he has to be able to see the floor as he's hitting it, right? So got to take him out.
I think you hit on something there with an operation board game of AD.
Yeah.
I think you hit on that right there. That's perfect. But yeah, of course, I have
board game.
The board game
should be like a foot, like 3 feet long, you know?
It is amazing with AD like this year too, that he's played in as many games. Cause every time it's like, you know, his Achilles, like things are bothering him and he's playing through it. But the scratch corny or whatever it was a new one. It was a new one.
That's a good
sure.
one. New one. Did not see that coming. All right. Let's give our play of the day for Monday. I'm going to take the Jazz +6 over the T-Wolves. Opened at 7.5. So I'm already a loser. I'm getting 6. I think it's kind of a rat line. I'm going to sound like Harry here with my analysis. They lost by 19 at home to the T-Wolves on Saturday. So this is one of those home, and then you play a couple days later home there. But they gave up. It's a little misleading. They gave up 37 in the fourth quarter. It was close going in there. T-Wolves also 3-0 against the Jazz this year. The Stifle Tower is questionable. I could see them sitting Gobert again. This game, some of the Jazz younger players are playing well, despite them as a team not racking up the wins. Keontae George with 18 last game. They're 20-14 at home. They do score more than the T-Wolves, 117-113. I'm going 116-113 as a final. Give me the 6 points and the Utah Jazz. Harry, what's your play of the day?
I got a player prop. See if Parlay Kid likes this one. I got Jalen Brunson of the Knicks. Under 39.5 points, rebounds, and assists at -120. Now, Brunson has been balling with 40-point games last two games against Sacramento and Portland. But before that, four straight games, he hadn't gone ahead and eclipsed at 39.5. And that includes playing Golden State a couple weeks ago. In fact, six in a row for Brunson against Golden State have gone under 39.5 when he's played the Warriors. And here's the stat. He's faced, the stat of the day, 21 times Jalen Brunson has faced the Warriors. His points, rebounds, and assists have gone under 39.5, 20 of 21 times playing the Warriors.
This is definitely going over. This is definitely going over.
20 of 21, TPK.
All right. I'm writing this down. Farley Kidd is not, you're not going to get him off the Knicks train right now. I mean, you love this team, Farley Kidd. They look solid with OG, even though he had he had 2 points on Saturday. But you love these British players. You've always said this.
Yes.
Well, one thing you have to realize about OG, one, he's not playing tonight, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Which hurts the Knicks as they are 15-2 with him in the lineup, Sal.
Crazy.
Kind of reminiscent of some old school basketball where they're holding teams under 100 points, 90 points, heck, even 80 points over the last few weeks, at least since OG's return. So good for them. You want my pick as well now, too?
Yeah, go ahead, do it. Yeah, might as well. Yeah, throw it
in. Well, look, just like yours. I mean, I was looking at Sacramento over the Grizzlies sitting at 9.5. Now I'm peeking at it. It's gone back up to 11 here, but too late for me to jump ship on that. I'll be taking Sacramento minus 11 after getting held to, close, basically 90 points against this vaunted Knicks defense. Two nights ago. I'm going to look for them to have a major bounce back performance offensively. Mm-hmm. Look for Kevin Huerter from the Kings to 0 points against the Knicks. Look for him to go over 1.5 threes as well in this game. But I'll take the Sacramento Kings. So bounce back. Memphis is a pretty dismal team. They could be game for about a half here. Sacramento's offensive juggernaut type, kind of. I think they pull away in the second half. They cover the 11 quite easily here, Sal.
All right. Brian, back to the Knicks. Josh Hart, you like him to have a big rebounding performance.
Yeah, over. I like him over 10.5 rebounds. I wanted to take DiVincenzo under points, but with OG out tonight, Dante's going to be jacking up like 15 threes here. So, yeah. Hart over 10.5. This is a Darren type of pick here, just because Darren is, constantly sends us texts about Hart being one of the best rebounding guards of all time in terms of just dominant on the boards. Look, he's averaging over 13 this month so far, averaging 14.5 boards over his last four games. And again, the guy hustles his ass off. And again, without OG in the lineup, besides Hartenstein, I don't see guys who really take rebounds away from him, especially in this game tonight. So I just think 10.5 is low.
All right. There you go. Listen, we're going to take a break. We gave you some picks. We're going to revisit some of the misery we suffered this weekend in our bets in a segment we call Bet Aches. That's in the break. We'll be right back. It's time to deep dive into the collectively crushed soul of the D3 in a segment we hate to call Bet Aches.
When a bet makes you sick and you make the wrong pick, it's a bet ache. It's a bet ache. It's a bet ache.
All right, Parley Kid, this is a bet that you didn't make, right?
Yeah, that's why I feel like this is my bet ache, because I've always said sometimes not betting something and it hits is worse than betting something and losing. That's something that drives me more crazy than anything else. And Sal, around 3:00 on Sunday afternoon, my time over here on the East Coast, you reached out and said, "Hey, Parlay Kid, if you want to keep your interest, this is the time to jump on Scheffler." I think he was plus 180 at the time. If you wanted something fun to keep your interest in this golf.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start looking. I look and I see like the numbers change in front of my eyes, and Scheffler jumps to plus 350.
Mm.
Right. So, when this happens, I got to jump on it quickly. Right.
Right.
I texted another buddy of mine, who's been hitting a lot in golf. I said, what do you think if I jump on Scheffler right now, plus 350? It took him probably about 45 seconds to get back to me. He said, yes, do it. By the time I went back and looked, it was back down to like plus 180. Mm. And I let it go. Forget it then. Right. So I just said, I dismissed it. I still should have stayed with it. Or instead of having to consult somebody else, I just should have said plus 350. I'm not going to hit. It's not going to be any better than that. And rolled with it. Instead, I'm a loser on both ends.
Yeah.
Shame on me. Shame on me. Cause like, you gave me the heads up. You and Brother Bri were on it from the start, at least start of Sunday. And I should have jumped on. This guy Scheffler is tremendous. I'm not sure if we can recall a golfer who has had this long of a stretch of, I mean, dominance, I think.
Just, wow. You don't want to compare him to Tiger because you have to pay like minus 150 to win a tournament or something
Besides
stupid.
Because Tiger, everyone was
but also from being kind of a nobody, to doing what he's doing. Not just like a prodigy of some sort, you know?
Unlike Rory, I don't get emotional betting. I'm like, all right, he's either going to take care of me or he's not. Right, Bri? I feel like Scheffler's just so much fun. But Paulie Kidd, maybe the lesson is, before you go in, you just bet it when you can, right? You bet a small amount on it when you could get it at plus 350, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, whatever, and then get confirmation from your friends. Then so you could put another 10, 15, 20 grand on it. support. You know what I'm saying? Just go small. Once you see that number, then you have to worry.
Right. Go small, like 2,500, something in that. And then I could go bigger, right? Once I get the confirmation. Right. That makes a lot of sense. And it just figured that Scheffler, you know, passes Xander Schauffele, who finds a way to blow it at the end, too. One of those guys, right, Ari?
Always Xander.
Oh, Brian Clark putt. It would have been an overtime, but that was crazy how that jumped out of the hole as he tried to catch Scheffler on 18. So, all right, that's yours. Bri, what's your betting?
I don't really have one. Look, I had a pretty good weekend. I had, I had Scheffler top 10. I gave that out for Shark Tank, and then I had Scheffler to win it. I jumped on it. Mm-hmm. I jumped on it more on Sunday at plus 250, which was nice. But, I will say I did a pretty good job this weekend staying away from some of the conference championships in terms of, the big upsets that hit. Kentucky was probably, in terms of my worst bet for the week, I gave out Kentucky for the tournament. I bet them for the tournament. I bet them for that first game, too. And they just kind of got routed.
I didn't have as much luck staying away. I had Brown-Princeton Saturday. Now, listen, you know me. When I wake up Saturday, it's usually the only thing I have is like soccer. I mix it with some golf, some MMA stuff. But to have college basketball out here at 8 a.m., not 9, 8 in the morning, was tremendous. Now, there were two tips, right, Ari, at 8 a.m.? It was Princeton.
Yeah.
And it was also Vermont. Now, I already had Vermont and McNeese State to both win their tournaments on a parlay. So I didn't double up on Vermont. I take Princeton, and they get smoked by Brown. I know they made a comeback at the end, but they were just terrible. They were down, and I was watching my kid play basketball. I'm like, while watching this, I was getting so mad. And it was the first time ever, I texted you this, Harry, a four seed ever beat a one in the Ivy League. Can you believe that, Bri? First time ever a four beat a one in the Ivy League?
Ivy League's been around really for at least crazy.
20 years. Harvard, right? Crazy. So I can't complain.
I guess it's
too
very
much.
Top. I guess it's top. I guess it's been top heavy. Top two or three teams. I guess
Once Ivy League. I mean, this Brown team probably won what 8 games going into the tournament. I don't know what it was, but and I almost got bit again. Of course, I took Yale yesterday, so I can't complain too much bet ache wise because I had Yale and they made a crazy comeback. Like to not need a three to win at the end. Like, I don't know what happened. I wrote it off and then Harry's like, whoa, wow. I'm like, oh, I hope this wow is for the right reasons. Otherwise, I'm going to be mad. And then I see that Yale wins by a point. So that's
down,
good.
Down five with 23 seconds left in the game.
Yes, exactly. Just nuts. And the putback to win was the easiest buzzer beater you'll ever see. Like it was like a 3-foot floater. And that was that. So anyway, Brown Princeton.
Speaking of left-hand shots.
Yes, exactly. If that Brown Princeton game is a 2 p.m. tip, I don't touch it. But because it was 8 in the morning, they schedule it that. And that's why that was where it was. Bri, give us a women's tournament pick. South Carolina is the favorite at minus 135. Iowa 7-1. LSU plus 750. Now, you and Tate Frazier, you swore by LSU entering this year.
We did.
That is better.
I gave you that at the beginning of the year. I will say I can't wait for FanDuel. They got to give me the brackets. I need to know Final Four odds and stuff. That's not up yet, but I gave you LSU. I jumped on them in April, and then they signed Haley Van Lith, came over from Louisville, and then I put even more on them. So I'm already kind of locked into. I have a lot of money on LSU. I'm going back to South Carolina. They're minus 135. If you don't think they're going to win, you can bet the opposite side. You can bet anybody else to win at plus 115. And look, I had South Carolina last year. I think, last year they had no 3-point shooting. This year they're one of the best 3-point shooting teams, and to add that to their toughness. But I think we're going to see a rematch. I kind of think that rematch just from a week and a half ago when we saw that mini brawl between South Carolina and LSU. I think that's what we're going to see. But the one thing I will say is usually in the women's game, always in the past, there was four or five teams. The last couple of years, five or six teams maybe could win. This year, there's a legit 10 teams who could potentially win. Like, you know, Notre Dame's like the 10th team. They just don't have the depth. I will say Notre Dame's going to be my team next year. Notre Dame's winning it next year. I still think it's going to come down to, I think it's still going to come down to South Carolina being the toughest team. But I will say, Sal, that the Albany region with Iowa, LSU, UCLA, I mean,
yeah,
my God, that's, we talked about the East for the men's. That's way tougher for the women's, that side of the bracket.
Crazy. I think everyone's going to hate me for this, but you know, I'm a don't pass guy. I'm a no buzzer beater guy.
You're going to bet against South Carolina?
Well, I think I'm going to bet against Caitlin Clark, which is even more sacrilegious when it comes to... Now, I can't bet against them at 7-1, but yeah, you're right. When those regional odds come out, maybe it'll be a little easier.
I don't know.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, that'll be tough. Yeah, I'm very interested.
I guess I can wait till the third game or fourth game or something. Yeah. Maybe that's where I...
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're not going to see the one seed... And the women's game is kind of like the men's years ago. You're not going to see an upset until at least the third. It's got to get to the third round.
Yep. Yeah. So South Carolina was minus 140 last year. I saw coming into. Does that sound right? Coming into the tournament.
Yeah.
And now they're Now they're 1-35.
Yeah, they could have been. I think, and then they jumped up. Yeah, South Carolina at some point, maybe after the first two rounds, was like minus 250. I think. But there I had money all over them last year. This year again, I have money all over LSU. Mm-hmm. But I think I really should hedge that and take South Carolina right now.
Brian, I got South Carolina at plus 750.
Yeah, coming into the season. I think they were 10-1. Coming into the season. So yeah, that was a good bet.
Not that good this year of all teams.
Well, they just don't. They have injuries and don't have a lot of depth. They still could come. They could still get out of their region. They're just not.
Play
they're
Syracuse
not gonna,
in the second round probably.
Yeah, they're not going to win it. And Syracuse is pretty good. Not going to win it, but they're going to, they still could come out of that region. Their region's not, it's not the hardest. Ohio State and.
All right. So listen,
USC are good.
Little schedule change here. We are going to do the second against all odds. It's typically, I don't even know when the hell it airs. Wednesday night, I think. Now we're going to post it Thursday night. So we'll be going over all the Friday games on that. On Cousin Sal's winning weekend, which is typically on Friday morning, is now going to post or air on Thursday morning. That'll be an overall tournament preview, even though we gave you our winners just now. I am getting notice that Seth Greenberg, who Tate Frazier, our guest earlier, slandered on this podcast, will be the guest on Cousin Sal's winning weekend for Thursday. So that's going to be fun. We'll have him on. We'll have the D3. And that's going to do it for another episode of Against All Odds. For Mikey Meatballs, Tate Frazier, and the D3, I'm Sal saying so long and happy handicap.
Must be 21 or older and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPENY in New York.